Blog Talk Radio.
Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. No one? He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his methods. The word lynching came from his last name. His methods were very simple, but they were diabolical. Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind. I and every other professor on this campus are here to help you to find, take back, and keep your righteous mind. Because obviously, you have lost it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. Your heroes have returned, or I should say hero. This is Afro Nerd Radio, a.k.a. Afro Nerd, featuring Captain Kirk. And the captain, my partner in white-collar crime, he's unavailable. He's out on assignment. I assure you he will be returning on Saturday for the Grindhouse edition of the show. But don't worry. Again, he will be returning. So I am for Delph, as they say on the street. I am for self, for Delph. Anyway, this is going to be a great show, ladies and gentlemen. For a second time, we are expecting, I spoke with her a few moments ago behind the scenes, Ms. Jocelyn Cooper, who I would dub the high priestess of Afropunk, the manager of Afropunk. Actually, I think this might be her now. I want to go to a quick groove first. Let me just make sure that this is, again, the high priestess of Afropunk. Jocelyn?
No, this is Kim.
Okay, Kim. All right, no problem. Kim, hold on. We're going to go to a quick groove, and then we're going to converse with Ms. Jocelyn Cooper. So hold on. Okay, so folks, as I said, I want to say one more thing, actually, before I go to a groove. I became aware of a young man by the name of Talib Starks. Talib Starks, and hopefully we'll get him on the show. I sent him a quick tweet, and he responded. You think I'm rough, or maybe you don't, but let's say I think I'm rough. He's far rougher. He has a book called The Uncivil War, Blacks versus Niggers. I kid you not. Man of color, he really lays it down. And he was recently on the Adam Carolla podcast, so I had to reach out to this gentleman. But he did say something that I had a problem with. He said that black folk are monolithic, and there appears to be just one way to be black. And I think, I know what he meant because I've said something similar to that, the captain and myself, but that's not the case. It's the exposure of the alternative culture for blackness that's at issue. But you can't say that there aren't any different types of black folks because there are. This show is a testament to it, and Ms. Jocelyn Cooper coming up is also a testament to it. It's just that it's an exposure issue. So that's one reason why I want to get him on the show, to correct him on that one thing. But other than that, that will be the show not to miss when we do set that up. But this is the show not to miss. Ms. Jocelyn Cooper coming up in a few moments talking about the upcoming Afropunk Festival this weekend, the 23rd and the 24th. So let's go to a quick groove, pay homage to Afropunk. This is a legendary group that might have been actually the inventors of the punk scene. Believe it or not, black folks, it looks like they invented proto-punk or punk rock. The group's called Death, and they've gotten back together, and they're on the move, so there's a lot of write-ups about Death, but they were around in the 70s, so we'll get into it. This is Politicians in My Eyes. Politicians in My Eyes by Death. We'll be back. Let's groove as we await Ms. Jocelyn Cooper. Once a game that was legendary proto-punk rock band Death, Titians in My Eyes. And actually, there's a documentary. I believe it's called A Band Called Death. I would certainly advise our listenership to check it out. It might even be available on YouTube. But I would check out their story because you're talking about young men in the 70s. Young men in the 70s that were onto something. It looks as if they invented potentially punk rock music. You know, Sid Vicious and that whole crew, they get the credit. But it appears that Death, these cats were throwing it down, but because they were African-American and they were doing something different, they were disregarded. Anyway, I think I see Ms. Cooper through the studio window. Theater of the mind, people, theater of the mind. The high priestess of the Afropunk Festival is upon us. I think this is the young lady now. Jocelyn.
How you doing?
Hello. Welcome once again for a second time to Afronet Radio.
Good to be here.
You know, I have a
good
great fondness for I have a great fondness for you and you as well as the movement and this festival. As a true nerd, you come first, then New York Comic Con comes second. So there's a whole thing with me with this deal. I'm just so happy. I told you, I have a thing with me. I'm just so happy to see different types of black folk grooving and moving to a different beat, not stereotypical. It's a side of black folk that we're not really seeing in the media enough. So I applaud you for really helping this movement come on, you and, of course, Mr. Morgan. So I'm very appreciative of that. Tell us what to expect this time around. You know, this is coming up this weekend. I have some folks that are coming up from North Carolina. I want to talk about that. This thing is growing. I mean, you know that anyway, but I wasn't really aware of the out-of-state portion of this. There's people coming from out-of-state.
It's amazing. There are people coming from out of state. There are people coming from outside of the country. It's mind blowing for us, honestly. We're really we're just so excited and so honored that, you know, it's grown, and it's grown so organically, and that you know, the community is you know, so supportive.
Where are we now? Like, again, this is 2014, and when did Afropunk start? Like 2003, 2002, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, Afropunk, sort of the seed of the idea, started with the documentary.
Right.
The festival itself, and, you know, there are lots of different dates out there, but the festival as we know it, you know, an outdoor event with multiple bands and, you know, different elements. I think the first was really film and music. As we know, it was 2005. So 2004, 2005, you know, Matthew's saying that we're celebrating his 10th year anniversary producing Afropunk. But that was a very, very small, you know, seed of you know, a party that has turned into now, you know, 60,000 people coming together.
What has changed from 2005 to now, but beyond the numbers? What has changed, and what would you like to continue to see as far as change with Afropunk going forward?
I mean, I think what the definition of how people see Afropunk has changed. I think, you know, 10 years ago, it was a subset of a subset of folks who were considered to be Afropunk, sort of the very linear definition of what it was to be an American punk rocker. I know that Matthew has a very different definition of what that is, because he grew up as, you know, an English, West Indian, you know, mixed race person. So punk rock was more West Indian for him than it was about, you know, sort of the culture that we think of in this country. And I think that, you know, there's an aesthetic and a community that are excited that they have found each other online around the country and around the globe. And music has changed, and obviously radio has changed.
Not for the better. Not for the better.
Not for the better. And obviously there are more bands of color that are out there and touring and are taking more risks and are feeling like they're more expressing themselves more. So, and obviously because of the internet and people being able to communicate and get together, all of that has changed.
You mentioned that there's a sampler. Is there a DVD or I shouldn't say DVD, a MP3 download that's connected with the Afropunk Festival? Is there something?
Yeah, Amazon is, we've got an Afropunk sampler with Shabazz Palaces and Leanne LaHavis and Clipping and Hora and Sunny Gang and Cakes the Killer and all of these amazing artists, Denishan Scene, that are performing at the festival, Alice Smith, and it's just the real diversity and sort of mashup of genres of music that Afropunk is. And you can find the sampler on Amazon.com.
I would be shocked. I know that this is, you know, you're a darling of the New York Times. I mean, they really dig into the cultural aspect of Afropunk. But
yeah.
I will say that it is such an eclectic affair. I mean, if you think about D'Angelo appearing, Sharon Jones is going to be funking it down. I love both these individuals, but Sharon Jones, D'Angelo, Fishbone, Bad Brains, Ice-T. I mean,
Cro-Mags, Straight Line Stitch, The Internet, SZA, Cakes the Killer. It's amazing.
How does this not become more, just the lineup alone to me? Michelle and Diego Cello, for God's sake.
Yeah, if you've ever seen Leanne LaHavis, she's amazing.
I mean, how does this not get more notoriety? In the sense that, I mean, this is a spectacle in a good way with this kind of diversity, and yet we're perceived as a monolith. I mean, it's really completely knocked it out of the water. What do you think is going on where, I'm pretty sure the New York Times will cover this, but this needs to be, like, really more of a thing where everyone has to take notice.
Well, to be really honest, everyone is taking notice this year. I mean, the press requests are ranging from, you know, Ebony and Essence to Vogue to, you know, Rolling Stone and Revolt. It's really the coverage this year is going to be very, very interesting, and it's almost overwhelming for us. And it's as much about the music as it is about, you know, fashion and culture and the cultural shift that's happening and Afropunk, you know, being at the forefront of that. So it will be, I mean, we were interviewed by Metro Focus and Channel 13. Matthew was on Melissa Harris Perry on Sunday. You know, Vogue is doing a shoot on site. It's going to be an interesting year. For sure.
I know that as an attendee, I've noticed that on occasion, you know, whether it's a speaker or an artist, they may go into some kind of political discourse before they get into a groove. In light of what has happened in the last week and a half, 2 weeks with Mr. Young Master Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, how do you think that's going to play with his untimely death and the whole politics behind that? Do you foresee that also kind of having an effect on how this is going to go down Saturday and Sunday?
Without a doubt. I mean, if you go to Afropunk.com and you are engaging on the site, you know, the community that is online really cares about what's going on in the world and in their communities, and in particularly politically what's happening. I mean, we have, at the festival, we have an activism row that, you know, we've got, I think it's, I don't know, 10 folks, organizations that have come out, that are coming out this year to register folks to vote, to, you know, Milk Not Jails is coming. We're doing HIV testing, just community organizations that really grassroots are you know, fighting for folks. So it is at the core of who we are.
We have a caller, actually. She's been on hold for a moment. I'm curious as to what she may want to ask you. A longtime listener, actually. Let's get into it. Kim, is that you?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Yes.
Welcome, and thanks for coming, Ms. Joycelyn. As you were talking about the media coverage being bigger and the festival being bigger and Afropunk being an Afro phenomenon, how do you manage keeping it Afro and not letting it go mainstream? And I guess, excuse me, I don't know how we do it, but if I can go to Essence and pick up what's going on Afropunk, and then I can go in Vogue and pick up Afropunk. It's like, you know, do I buy both magazines, or, you know, how do you manage that, or is that to be managed, or does that even matter?
It's not for us to manage. It's, you know, if people want to come and look into our world and, you know, they find it interesting, you know, that's fine. What we manage and what we're focused on is, you know, creating images, positive images of people of color, telling stories about people of color that mainstream media does not cover, and creating a free space for folks to be who they are and not have to make any excuses. And to, you know, we've got this year, which is amazing for us, we're doing a pop-up bookstore with author signings this year. We're doing, you know, we have Activism Row. We've got a market of 100 craft community vendors. So although, you know, it's getting bigger and more media outlets are paying attention, it still is always about community for us. That's the community of bands. It, you know, most of the bands that perform, it's about discovery of music and exposing those artists to a community of people. So as we get bigger, it only helps the culture.
Well, I think it's unavoidable. I mean, thank you, Kim. Thank you. I think it's unavoidable, isn't it? I mean, hip-hop was so much of an underground thing. It's been so long that I think people forget. Dare
yeah.
I say, I remember, I don't want to say too much about my – I remember that hip-hop was a real underground thing. I remember
yep.
it was exclusively a New York thing. And now,
yep.
it's so much time has passed, we just take it for granted. But it wasn't always what it is today, whatever it is
No,
today.
But also, honestly, the evolution of what is happening, you know, in some of hip-hop, with Shabazz Palaces, with Loaf Music, with Clipping, with – Hora. I mean, these are all hip-hop artists, with Cakes the Killer. I mean, Cakes is an openly gay rapper from New Jersey who can, you know, hang with the best of them. So it's, you know, there are amazing things that are happening in hip-hop, but they aren't mainstream, and we're highlighting that. We're showcasing that for folks. So
to our audience, once again, we have I say this affectionately. I have dubbed you, but you probably heard it before, the High Priestess of Afropunk.
Oh, Lord. not the High Priestess.
So feel free to buzz in, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do have a few more questions. But
yeah,
I'd like to
have to go back to work. We have a festival in 2 days.
Okay, I was about to say that. I want to go to a quick two-minute groove, because we are talking about Afropunk. And then a few questions, and then we're going to have you go back to work, because I'm going to be grooving with you Saturday and Sunday for sure.
Fantastic.
You know, last time we spoke, you asked me my thoughts on what Afropunk was. And I
mm-hmm.
gave you some Afro-nerdic, hoity-toity answer. And what I really should have said, it's a place where they let your freak flag fly.
Fly.
That's probably a better answer. So just
well,
about a
minute
and a half.
Well, you can feel free to let your freak flag fly, for sure.
Correct. This is another grand dame of Afropunk, Janelle Monae, and somebody who's still wearing his Afro, Prince. Give them what they love. About a minute, we'll be right back. More with Ms. Jocelyn Cooper. Hold on. Let's groove.
Give you what you love. It's time to give you what you love.
the phaser, and I think that song is apropos because I suspect that Afropunk is going to give you what you love. That is, of course, Janelle Monáe and His Royal Badness, Prince. Doesn't get any better than that, Jocelyn, and I wish they would play this on conventional radio or just so I could hear it, hear some Death, hear some Fishbone, hear some Shinobi Ninja. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there. This whole idea that there's not, you know, because when you speak to people who are not really familiar with this or they pretend that there's no such thing as a black indie movement, they give you this thing of, well, you know, how many artists are they talking about? Is it just five people? It's hundreds of people, literally, maybe more than that.
There's
definitely
more than
enough
that
music to rotate for it to be in heavy rotation. So I think more than what's going on for hip-hop commercially. I don't know, about 20 people in commercial hip-hop music that's really, you know, out there.
I don't know about that, but I definitely know that there are, I mean, if you talk about the pool of bands that are, you know, on Afropunk.com and the bands that sign up for our Battle of the Bands program that we do, you know, we start in March, it's amazing to see how many incredibly talented folks are out there. I mean, you know, between last year it was Unlocking the Truth and year before with Skins and, you know, Radkey and the Bots and bands that, you know, have been part of sort of our program and coming up through the ranks. It's amazing to see, and they're, you know, they're not stopping. So
two quick questions, and then I want you to go back to work because I want to get down this weekend.
Yeah, otherwise there won't be a festival.
Two things. First, who are you, beyond 2014, who haven't you gotten that you'd like to get going forward as far as a performer?
You just played him. You just played him. Prince is the ultimate.
That's going to be, I mean, anything that has, is he aware of Afropunk? I mean, well, you know, I'm sure he is, but any feelers out there?
I hear he may know a little bit about it.
Okay, you're hinting at something. I won't cut loose on. Okay, I'm gonna leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. And also, last thing, what about expanding it even as far as a branding? Afropunk UK, Afropunk Africa. I know there's a big punk scene in Africa. Any thoughts about, you know, even an Afropunk tour?
We've toured. We leave New York, and we're doing a big party in Atlanta the first weekend in September. And the idea is for us to take the festival to Atlanta and to Oakland next year. So we'll, you know, obviously not the big version that we have now, but the idea is that we're in other cities for sure.
I think I've bugged you enough.
You haven't bugged me at all. Thank you so much. This is so wonderful. I look forward to my yearly call.
Yes. Well, no, it'll be quicker than that, and I'll be there this weekend with a few friends, so it should be pretty cool. Jocelyn, as always, we appreciate you coming through, and you're doing something very important beyond just a music fan.
Thank
I think
you.
It's a big thing. It's a big thing. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to be a part of the show, and I'll see you this weekend, and I hope to see everybody who's listening this weekend.
Good.
All right, take care.
You too. Thank you. Ms. Jocelyn Cooper, folks. Certainly go to Afropunk.com. And actually, you know, listen, as I've mentioned these other sites. You know, there's Afropunk. There's boldaslove.us. Check that out. Go to okplayer.com. And there's a number of websites that really showcase alternate music from people of color. It doesn't always have to be world star hip hop. I mean, I know they have their own, whatever that is, whatever that is, they are disseminating a type of music. What we have to have is a balance. We have to have a counter to that. That can't be the sole face of black music. It just cannot. It's problematic. So check it out. If you're in the New York City area, definitely check out Afropunk, the Afropunk Festival, the 23rd, 24th, at Commodore Barry Park, downtown Brooklyn. You know, folks, for those unfamiliar, I mentioned at the top of the show that Captain Kirk, he's out on assignment. He'll be returning. You know what? I said Saturday. God forbid. We're not going to have a show on Saturday. No way. You know, we'll get to it next Wednesday, but because of Afropunk, I'm not going to be able to do a show. I'm sorry. I wish perhaps in the future we could do a show from Afropunk. That would be the hotness. Think about that. So maybe that's foretelling. But anyway, I think I would be not really on my P's and Q's if I didn't get into more on this Michael Brown thing. It's almost unavoidable. There's so many – everyone's talking about this thing, ladies and gentlemen. It just will not stop. And I have such – well, my views have not changed on this. I'll be honest with you. My views have not changed. But I wanted to mention this a little bit, even when I was discussing with Jocelyn, is that the whole premise of diversity is a big thing with Afropunk. And believe it or not, I think that if there's going to be anything good that comes out of this Michael Brown thing, and you know, it's difficult to even put it in that way, good from someone dying. But sometimes things have to – it takes a death. I mean, heck, you know, the listening audience probably knows that they've experienced horrendous accidents in a neighborhood where there might have been – there should have been a stop sign. There should have been a traffic light. And it took an accident, usually a grotesque one, for someone to decide to put a traffic light there or a stop sign or something. So sometimes it just takes a tragedy for things to work itself out and for improvement to come to move forward, for improvement to actually be considered. So I'm listening to a lot of podcasts. I'm reading the newspaper. I'm online. I'm listening to different media outlets, left and right, center. I'm all over the place with this thing. And I think a chief component to how this is being perceived is that, well, not even perceived, but what's coming out of it is I think you're hearing more voices. I think we're starting to get to that point where this kind of thing can no longer be denied. However you feel about it. I weigh in on this a bit differently than what the media would perceive the general black view to be. Now, I'm thinking I'm in my own head, but I'm hearing more and more men and women of color who are weighing in on this thing, not exactly the way that the mainstream media or the mainstream progressive media would like for you to believe. And I think that's a good thing. I think deconstructing the monolith, which is, again, referencing Afropunk, is so much about that, fully or wrongfully. Listen, there's people that hate on Afropunk. There are people who don't get it, people who don't understand it. This will be my third time going to Afropunk, and there are some folks that who are on the outside, I've been there to see it, where they don't get it, and they're hating on it. But it's a good thing that Afropunk is there. And the fact that you might have come across folks that, again, are weighing in differently on this issue than what would be perceived to be the conventional black point of view, I think that's a good thing. And I just have this feeling that we might be on the cusp of seeing some legitimate change. But it's going to happen not the way that it's expected. I think folks are hitting up against a wall that we can't really continue to tolerate black men and women, but mostly men, black young men of a certain demographic age, what have you, dying. And something has to be done, and I think – I'm hearing more people. Heck, Sergio Mims, friend of the show, who's a resident, along with Kim Success, a resident of Chicago, a.k.a. Chirac. He sends me an email that was from a friend of his that said something to the effect, is a rather lengthy email, and he said that, you know something? You know, maybe these black conservatives are on to something. And I think, I believe this person is not a conservative, but this is happening with so much frequency that now we're starting to hear maybe, you know, not a fan of Gilbert Arenas, the basketball player, not a fan. He accused Reverend Sharpton of being a coon, an opportunist, and so forth. What makes it problematic, of course, is that Gilbert Arenas, a few years back, brought a loaded weapon into a locker room, and he exhibited coon-worthy behavior. So for him to critique Reverend Sharpton, it almost becomes null and void. But 2 + 2 is still 4, whether it comes from a nut or not. But it would have, what he said would have had more resonance if he was a bit more consistent in his behavior. But I'm hearing more and more folks, and not just from the regular cast of characters from Fox News, I'm hearing more people who are questioning Reverend Sharpton's efficacy, questioning him, questioning his motives, and the voices are becoming louder. So I think that's interesting. Matter of fact, there's a new show. I think it's a show that's being tested, and she might end up getting a regular gig at Sirius. Her name is Karen Hunter. She's a author and a publisher. She owns a publishing company. And she has her own show, the Karen Hunter Show. And a few days ago, she had a show where the topic was plain. The topic was plain as Michael Brown versus black-on-black crime. Now, I thought that was pretty amazing because you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to set up a show where you put these tragic events or tragic issues where you have police, a singular high-profile police brutality issue up against black-on-black crime where the numbers are exponentially greater than the other issue. And she also interviewed another person I've got to get on the show, Jason Riley. Mr. Jason Riley, he's an editor at the Wall Street Journal, and I believe he has a book out that the captain hit me to. I'll look up the name of the book, but it's a book that questions the loyalty of black folk, the unquestionable, undying loyalty of black people to the Democratic Party. I think it's something about liberal stop helping black people, something to that effect. I'll get the correct title of the book in a moment. But he's been making the rounds. I mentioned Tlaib Starks on the Adam Carolla show at the top of the show. I got to get this guy on. His book is called The Uncivil War, Blacks versus Niggers, not even niggas, niggers. And he puts it out front and center, something we've been discussing on this show for eons now. The premise that ratchet culture, and we here don't really use that terminology, but we use the term lower tier. Ratchet culture, lower tier culture, which is a distant cousin to white, poor white trash culture, or redneck culture, that it is a distinctive cultural standard. It is a distinctive thing. The melanin content might be different, but the idea of his existence is very real. No one questions the existence of PWT, redneck culture, Appalachian culture. No one questions that. That's something that's sociologically viable. We know that this cultural standard exists. But when you try to encapsulate that from a black perspective, a.k.a. ratchet culture, lower tier culture, whatever, ghetto culture, ghetto centricity, whatever euphemism you are comfortable with. It is a codified thing. And Mr. Starks, and I talk about our own Mr. Starks, again, to leave Starks, not ironic that both these Starks have kind of a similar philosophy, but to leave Starks puts it out there about this cultural standard that has taken over middle class, mainstream, black culture. There are a myriad of cultures in the African diaspora. There are a myriad of cultures in the African diaspora. But we seem to be seeing, thanks to mainstream media, a singular viewpoint. I mean, I'm going to go to a groove in a moment, but I was listening to NPR, and they were unpacking on this Michael Brown affair. And it was so, so progressive. And it's a progressive station, but it's a problem when you think that between hip-hop, the minstrel hip-hop, and a progressive ideology, it's really what is allowed for black people. Now, we know that, you know, there's different things going on. But as far as what is primarily pushed, I'm not even asking for black folks to even agree with Mr. Starks, the other Mr. Starks, myself, or Captain Kirk, Juan Williams, Dr. Cosby, the list of folks I can go on and on. People have Dr. John McWhorter. There's a number of people that come in on a certain bent. You don't have to agree with these people, but I'm curious as to why can't we at least hear them more frequently, urban radio, for black ears, black and brown ears. I think Herman Badillo of Puerto Rican descent, he also weighs in very much like Bill Cosby. So that's just another name that came to my mind. But there are a number of voices out here that I'm starting to hear a little bit, with a little bit more resonance. It's getting louder now. I'm not imagining this. There's more people weighing in differently from this situation because it is glaring. But just today, for me to just to really hear, like, wow, you know, I'm hearing this progressive bent, but you have the hip hop thing going on, and no one thinks this isn't a problem. Even if you don't like, you know, all these other folks that I've mentioned, even if you don't like them, I think you should hear them and hear other people beyond them. But if you hear them from a black perspective, then maybe you might take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and create your own political gumbo. But for it to only be this one way, you have this regressive hip-hop thing going on as your theme music, as your background noise, and you have this victimization liberal mindset, rightfully or wrongfully. I agree with some of what the progressives say. I agree with the historical record that they lay out. But damn it, man, can't you hear more perspectives as a black man, as a black woman, as a brown man, brown woman, as a minority? Can't you hear these people? But there's something going on that's making it seem that it's a singular message. And operative word, and we're going to go to this groove. The operative word of progressive is progress. And I don't see any. That's the deal. You know, people are realizing that we're 30, 40, 50 years in post-civil rights, and the methodology is the same. We have a temper tantrum. We're rioting. The rioting is a little bit more intense because now you have Facebook and you have cameras. Anyone has a camera. Anyone can submit this on the Internet. So it's a little bit more intense because of now you can pass this on and around, and people can think what they will. But for this to be the same thing, the same cultural meme and standard and direction that black folk are positioned to take, this can't be it. This cannot be it. All right, folks, you're listening to the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Although Mr. Kirk, Captain Kirk is not available. He's out on assignment. He'll be back the following Wednesday. I forgot that this weekend is Afropunk time, and we will discuss what has happened post the festival. So anyways, with my thoughts about Afropunk, let's go to a person that might be worthy of Afropunk also, Lenny Kravitz. Lenny Kravitz has a new album coming out, I think, sometime in September. This is, I believe, the lead single, Strut, Lenny Kravitz. Be right back. Let's groove. You know, I just realized something. A Kravitz will be in attendance at Afropunk this weekend. Guess who it is? It's going to be his baby girl, who's really a young woman now, not a bad-looking young woman at that. Zoe Kravitz, I believe, will be performing at Afropunk. So this is going to be a big to-do. But again, that was Lenny Kravitz, Strut. And who knows? Lenny may show his face there. Anybody could show up. I got a feeling, you know, Ms. Cooper didn't really want to get into this, but this may not be the thing to miss. Anybody could walk in. I mean, this is a growing thing. So, but again, Zoe Kravitz, if my understanding, is going to be performing at Afropunk. Folks, you know, I before the break, I mentioned Jason Riley as a person you may want to look out for. I'm going to try my best to get that gentleman on. I'm confident that Tlaib will come through. I just got to send him a quick email, but he did respond with interest via Twitter. Anyway, Jason Riley, Wall Street Journal editor, he has a book that actually the captain hit me to, and the book is called Please Stop Helping Us, How Liberals Make It Harder for Blacks to Succeed. Again, let me reference this. Let me go back to it again. Please Stop Helping Us, How Liberals Make It Harder for Blacks to Succeed. So he lays it out. I've been hearing him on interviews. So, you know, between this gentleman, Tlaib, Starks weighing in, there's a lot of voices all of a sudden coming out. And, you know, there's something going down. You know, matter of fact, if I can find this clip I'm going to play, I'm not comfortable with this clip. Not comfortable. This is from the policeman, Captain Ron Johnson, what he said to the residents of Ferguson. It was, I believe, at a church gathering, and he used his son as an example. So hold on. This is Captain Ron Johnson, who, for the most part, at this is the face of calm for what's happening at Ferguson. Hold on.
And thousands gathered in Ferguson Sunday at a rally in honor of Michael Brown. Missouri Highway Patrol Captain Ron Johnson, the state-appointed head of security in Ferguson, brought the crowd to its feet.
I want to start off by talking to Mike Brown's family. And I want you to know my heart goes out to you. I wear this uniform. And I should stand up here and say that I'm sorry. When this is over, I'm going to go in my son's room, my black son, who wears his pants sagging, wears his hat cocked to the side, got tattoos on his arm, but that's my baby. And we need to pray. We need to thank Mike for his life. We need to thank him for the change that he is going to make and to make us better. I love you. I stand tall with you. And I'll see you out there. Thank you.
Wow, what an amazing speech. Several hours later, after police fired tear gas at demonstrators, Captain Johnson said, quote, I had no alternative but to elevate the level of response. I can't think of a better man to be there at this time.
Very tough spot to be in. I mean, he says he wants to work with the protesters, but he also can stop them when they get to a certain point.
I also think we know so many details. It's nice to really hear something that's emotional and someone that can bring a real face to this issue. And, of course, hearing him talk so much about clothing, I think a lot of people think back to Trayvon Martin, and a lot of those emotions come up again.
Indeed, Benita. Mm-hmm.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we only got about 4 minutes remaining, but I suspect you know how I'm going to weigh in on this thing. I think what he said there is not being honest, and he's playing to the crowd. And for someone to be a police captain, a state police captain, and to kind of high-five his son's thuggish appearance. Now, I'm not saying his son is a thug. I'm not saying that at all. But some of what is happening with our inner city youth is that they're setting themselves up for failure, and they're setting themselves up to be indistinguishable from the real thugs. I mean, wasn't it 50 Cent that had a song called Wanksta? Wanksta versus Gangsta. Now, the policeman has to figure out who is who throughout all this mess. I'm confused. I mean, I could go on and on with this thing. I'm really having a difficult time. When you're able to see through these arguments and you're able to, shouting out David Carroll, to deconstruct these arguments, you just can't say anything and then not expect someone to dismantle or challenge or critique your view. I'm not going to be one of these conservatives on Fox where you beat people up. It's not about beating people up because of having a diverging view. All I'm asking, whether it's left or right or in the middle, you have to be able to defend your view. When I heard NPR, this NPR show earlier today, and it was rapidly progressive. And I'm not saying that to be facetious or to be anti-liberal, but what it is that it was so much of an ideology working with all parties on this show for this particular segment that you need nuance, you need moderation to be able to get to answers. You need quote unquote deconstruction. There were folks in there that were really minimizing Mr. Brown's strong-arming robbery incident, the videotape of that. They were just minimizing it as if it – because they have to. Because they have to. No one was – I believe they're calling it a shoplifting now. Well, he was just shoplifting. No, no. Winona Ryder, from a few years ago, the actress Winona Ryder, she was shoplifting. There are folks that you know, they take the item – and they run, or they don't have any interaction with the help. It's not really a menacing, weight throwing kind of thing. Mr. Brown stepped to an adult, stepped to the store owner in a threatening manner twice, giving him the impression that if you want to keep on pushing this, it's going to get a little nasty in here. Does it mean that he deserves a bullet or bullets? This has to be investigated. But it's a comportment issue, and we want to seem to – now, you know, we're hearing he's a college kid. Now we're hearing he's a trade school. And everything is changing. The witnesses' stories are conflicting. I mean, are we going to try to save lives or what? Are we going to be politically correct? Or are we going to be politically honest? Are we going to really save lives? And again, more and more – the questions are coming up with Labor Day's coming up. You have, you know, certain weekends where events, and it's to be expected that you're going to be hearing 20, 30, for example, 100 shootings sometimes at certain events in certain cities, Chicago, Camden, Brooklyn, Oakland, St. Louis, you name it, and it's going to be black folk versus black folk, spy versus spy, and no one is saying anything. That question is coming up a bit too frequently. So, folks, it is what it is. Folks, got seconds remaining. Absolute pleasure. I'm going to be going to the Afropunk Festival this weekend. We'll be back again the following week to unpack and talk about it. Absolute pleasure. I believe the Uncanny Daryl B from the comic shop is also in attendance. So that should be pretty interesting. So we're going to have a lot to discuss. All right, folks. Been real. See you next week. Let's go to a classic soul rock groove, Baby Love, Mother's Finest. See you next week.
There is no